Welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, brought to you on the MLW Radio Network and sponsored by our friends over there at WrestleZone.com. Hold on a second here. So, I saw that a lot of the wrestlers these days are drinking this White Claw, and I had no idea what it's about. And I haven't drank alcohol. I don't really drink very much. But we're going to make this a fun show, hopefully. And I'm going to try this White Claw, and we're going to see how many of these I can drink in this episode. And since I can't remember the last time I was inebriated, this might be an interesting show, or it might be the worst show of all time. Let's find out together. Hold on a second. This is called Raspberry. And I guess this White Claw is a sparkling water that's spiked and with a hint of raspberry. 5% alcohol. Let's go ahead and give it a taste. Almost drank one. Hold on. All right. So I'm not fooling around here. This is Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn, the Drink White Claw episode. And today we're going to talk about a few different things. First of all, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning into these daily shows we've been doing. We did a Monday morning show. It was off the chain, off the hook. People dug it. People downloaded it. Then we did a Raw Reunion review instant reaction show. And then, and same thing, lots of downloads, lots of reaction, people digging it. And then we did a SmackDown reaction show. And again, lots of downloads, people dug it. I can't thank you enough. We're still going to do our big show every single week. And this is our big show this week. And what are we going to talk about this week? Well, first of all, SummerSlam main event was announced. Kofi Kingston versus Randy Orton. We're going to look at the Randy Orton, Kofi Kingston story that took place 10 years ago. Well, almost 10 years ago. And see if there's anything to that. We're going to talk a little bit about the G1. I give you an amateur assessment kind of what the G1 was. And last week, I got some shit for, you know, mispronouncing stuff, but, you know, go fuck yourself, for real. And, but I'm going to tell you who I think is going to win and how it's going to play out. And I have the standings and maybe explain a little bit about it. We'll talk about AEW's TV announcement just a little bit. And the main focus of the show is I'm going to rewrite the Raw Reunion show and try to write it in a way that I think that would benefit the WWE and benefit viewers coming in for following shows. So the one I just drank was called Raspberry. I drank the whole thing. All right, so this one is, I was a little, my mouth is watering a lot. This is natural lime. Hold on 1 second. All right. Stealing Conrad's gimmick. Natural lime. Hold on a second. It's Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, on the MLW Network, on the MLW Radio Network, brought to you by our good friends over at WrestleZone.com, the world's most widely read internet news wrestling website. Natural lime, down the drain. So, we are going to talk about Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston. On the most recent SmackDown, Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton declared they're going to have their match at SummerSlam. This summer, I mean, when else would it be? This summer, for SummerSlam, they're going to have their match, and there's some history there. And the history is, in 2009, Kofi stated he had a match in Madison Square Garden where he did the air boom from the guardrail through the table. The fans were freaking the fuck out. It was fantastic. And then Randy killed it. Randy, you know, didn't think he was ready or whatever. And there's somewhat of a real story behind that, I think, because I researched the fuck out of it today and I couldn't find any first person reporting on what the hell happened. So the story goes a little bit like this. Kofi was on fire. And if you remember, Kofi was really on fucking fire. And as the story goes, as he's on fire, he has a match with Randy Orton. And it was a three-way, actually. The headline match of Raw, I believe it was January 11th, 2010. And in that match, there was something at the end that happened where Kofi was on the second rope, and he got hit, and he fell down. And I guess he was supposed to stay down for a punt. That's what it looked like. He was supposed to stay down for a punt. He got up a little bit. Randy tried to throw him down again. He stood back up. Randy just grabbed him and gave him like a legit RKO. And then said, stupid, stupid, stupid. as he started to pin him, he was so pissed off. And then as the show goes off the air, he's facing the camera and he goes, "You fucked it up. He fucked it up." You can see that's what he said.
Yeah.
This stuff really tastes like shit. Okay, so I pounded two, and I'm going to try black cherry now. It's not good. I mean, maybe you're not supposed to just pound it, so I'm just going to sip it now. The story goes that after that, and after some botches and some other stuff, Randy just put the kibosh on Kofi's career. Like, he did some political maneuvering or whatever, even though Randy obviously was in the wrong, and Randy kind of embarrassed himself, and no one who was watching would have known it was a fuck-up unless Randy acted so unprofessional, which he really did. Story goes that Randy did some political maneuvering backstage and got Kofi's push unpushed. But I couldn't really find anything that corroborated that except a bunch of stories. You know, like the What Culture videos, that kind of stuff. How Randy Orton, you know, I'm not going to do a British accent, but you know what I mean. But there's nothing, there's a lot of stories that says reporting at the time said this. Reporting at the time said there's a backstage altercation. I read that four different places. I researched all of the Observer newsletters. I researched all the torches from the time. I couldn't find the original story. So I'm not sure if that's exactly what happened. I think the one thing Meltzer said, and I actually, like, I researched the shit out of this, guys. I actually went to an old Wrestling Observer radio that happened at the time. And he said, well, it appeared that Kobe was in line for some stuff, and he got docked, and his push got derailed. You know, he got docked was the word. And it's grown into this thing where Kofi was supposed to win Money in the Bank. And of course, if you win Money in the Bank, you're going to get the title. And he was up and going. And that's what the story's turned into. But I'm not sure that's the actual story, because I haven't found any reporting. If Meltzer would have reported it, I'd believe it. And if Keller would have reported it, I would believe it. I don't know where that story came from, but I think I know what actually happened. And you're not going to be surprised. I believe it was bad booking, it was a lack of focus, and it was too many things going on at the same time. Because as soon as Kofi started taking off, he got very popular, and they burned that shit out. He was wrestling all the time. He was wrestling Orton all the time. And even Meltzer remarked a few weeks later that the cheers had died down a little bit. At the same time, you had Legacy going on, you had Sheamus going on, you had all kinds of stuff that was going on at the same time, which kind of derailed the focus a little bit from Kofi. Kofi was lightning in a bottle for a minute, but much like a lot of people who kind of rocket really quickly, it can't sustain, and it didn't sustain. In addition, there's a little bit of a kind of emperor has no clothes thing with Kofi where, okay, now we're crazy about the guy. Let's see what he can do. Let's see if he can build on this. And in reality, he really didn't. Also, he was a little bit. As a fan, once again, I'm not a wrestler. I'm always conscious of saying that. Hold on a second. Because I know I have wrestlers that listen, and I run into wrestlers. I never want to be that douchebag fan who's like, your work rate was this, or that clothesline sucked. So I always try to preface it like that, because I don't really know what the fuck I'm talking about more than anybody else. Well, the black cherry is now gone. So that's why I want to preface it by saying I am not a wrestler, but he did seem a little bit botchy. He did seem like he was losing steam for those reasons. He was a little botchy at the time. He wasn't quite ready. He was a little emperor has no clothes. Once he got that initial excitement, the fans want to see what's coming up next, and there wasn't a whole lot there. Not to the extent where he was ready to be champion. But I do want to see if anybody has it. I do want to see where it's been reported at that time. Randy killed his push. There was a backstage altercation. He was supposed to win Money in the Bank. And of course, if you win Money in the Bank, you're probably getting the title. And all that was squashed by Randy Orton. I'm not sure that actually happened. I think people look back now, say, well, of course that happened. That's what happened back then. You know, back in 2010, Randy Orton went back to Triple H and he said, Paul, he's not ready. Look how fucked up and shitty he is. And then Paul's like, fuck it. It's not happening. Kofi's dead. But I don't even think that, I don't know if there's any indication that there's any reporting at the time that that happened. But what did happen was that it just lost steam. I think I've repeated myself a couple times. I apologize for that. But relating it to 2019, This is something they can draw on. They can reframe this history and say, okay, in November of 2009, when I was kicking your ass in Madison Square Garden, you pulled some strings, and I only got booked at WrestleMania at the last second when they made Money in the Bank 10 men. And at that time, I realized that this business was political and that I wasn't going to play the game. So I formed a tag team, which he did with Air Boom. What a great fucking name that was. And, you know, I gave up my dreams at the time of ever being a headliner because I never thought I would get that choice. That is a great, to me, that's the story. And Randy's like, you're not ready then, you're not ready now. And what I like to see is a little bit more fire from Kofi, because when Randy said on SmackDown, I can take that title whenever I want to, Kofi holds a title up and says, I'll see you at SummerSlam. And I mean, you know, that didn't really do much. But I think it would be better if he would have said, hey, motherfucker, kick my ass now. Kick my ass now. Come on. Throw the title. This ain't about the title. Kick my ass now. And then, but oh, you don't want to fight me now? Well, I'll see your bitch ass at SummerSlam. Probably a few less cuss words. But that's the Kofi story. If I'm wrong, correct me. But that's the conventional wisdom I haven't seen anywhere else. And maybe it's a lesson in not just accepting what's the conventional wisdom and what's the thing that everybody says. And maybe look at the source, because I haven't found it. But I am looking forward to Kofi versus Randy. All right, so this one, goddamn. All right, so we have black cherry, raspberry, and what was the first one? Natural lime. That was the second one. So I guess, oh, there's a fourth one that I can have. Ruby, grapefruit, Roll Tide. I'm going to go ahead and take a drink of this one. The G1. So, ruby red, what the fuck is this called? Ruby grapefruit. It's fucking terrible. It's all terrible. I'd probably drink it. I don't know when I would drink this again. I don't think I ever will. But I'm gonna drink as many as I can right here, because why the fuck not? It's my life. I only live once. And I'm gonna drink some fucking alcohol water for you guys. So, oh shit. So my tweet, I just tweeted that I was drinking this shit, and I got liked by someone named John Schuyler. If you don't know who John Schuyler is, you probably should. John Schuyler is one of the few last independent workers in the world, probably. But you might have seen him on WWE TV. You might have seen him on NXT. I think he's done some Ring of Honor tapings. My son and I watched him. Sorry, I'm going off a tangent now. My son and I saw him at WrestleKate a few years ago. And then we saw him at NXT. But we saw him live at NXT at WWE Access. And my son's like, it's John Schuyler. And I'm like, who? And he's like, the Southern Savior. I was like, what? And he's like, the guy from WrestleKate. I was like, oh shit. He's really good. He is a guy who works his ass off. Super nice guy. I don't know him, but to say hi to him. But he's really a talented wrestler. And he's one of these guys just working his asses. Fucking A. He's one of these guys with a lot of talent. He understands wrestling. He worked his ass off. I saw him wrestle again at New Japan Pro Wrestling in Charlotte. Remember the show where none of the Japanese guys were there? John Schuyler is awesome. And you might have noticed him on Raw when they had Elias on. He played a role called Ricky Roberts, who was another singer. And John Schuyler is someone, remember that name, because you're going to see him. He should show up in AEW, or he should show up on WWE TV. He's really one of these guys that any wrestling company should be glad to have. He's out of North Carolina. John Schuyler, this fucking terrible goddamn drink right here is for you. Hold on a second. Let's talk about the G1. So, as I explained last week, you guys don't get on me about fucking pronunciations and shit. I'm a newer New Japan fan. I have been watching like a year and a half. So, I'm kind of an expert now. But basically, the G1 is a tournament. It's like a round robin tournament. There's a scoring system. You get certain numbers for wins, losses, and draws. No points for losses. And less points for a tie. And it's divided into a block A and a block B. So half the wrestlers are in block A, half the wrestlers are in block B. And then the winners of the point system in block A and block B face each other like they did, I believe, at MSG this year. And then the winner of that fucking match goes on to face the IWGP champion at Wrestle Kingdom, which is New Japan's WrestleMania. And I haven't watched all the matches because what the fuck? I mean, there's a fucking million goddamn matches, but the ones I've watched have been fucking awesome. So Ishii versus John Moxley, fantastic. Okada versus anybody is great. I saw Okada versus Bad Luck Fale, who I think gets a bad rap, but he's kind of the big guy out of the Bullet Club. I thought that was a good match. But Okada versus Ospreay was a fantastic match. And I got to give a shout out to one of the listeners. I can't remember his name, but he said, oh, it's fucking dancing. And I kind of called him out on the air and said, you didn't watch the goddamn match. And he tweeted me or messaged me and said, you're right, I didn't. My bad. But anyway, in Block A, it's loaded. At the very top of Block A, you've got Okada. Fuck his first name. Okada, he's got 8 points. And you've got Kenta, the former Hideo Itami, who's got 8 points as well. And then it goes down to Lance Archer, Evil, Tanahashi, who's a former IWGP champion recently, Ibushi, who's kind of like physically their version of Kerry Von Erich, but he's very reckless, great wrestler you might have seen in the Cruiserweight Classic, Bad Luck Fale, who is the underboss of the Bullet Club, one of the original members, I'm sorry, Sonata, who you might remember Sonata from Impact, Will Ospreay, who is the greatest wrestler in the world, and Zack Sabre Jr., who's a lot like Bryan Danielson was in his heyday. He might even be a little bit better. Zack Sabre has 0 points. Ospreay's got 2, and they might not factor in. In Block B, you got Moxley, John Moxley, the former Dean Ambrose at the top with 8 points, then Juice Robinson, the former CJ Parker from NXT with 6 points, Ishii with 4, Toru Yano with 4, Shingo Takagi with 4, Naito with 4, Tai Chi. You might want to keep an eye on Tai Chi for the future. He's a future main eventer, future IWGP champion. He's got a gimmick. He's big. I mean, he's tall, and he's great. Goto, another top New Japan star, and Jeff Cobb round out. And Jay White, who is an IWGP champion very recently as well, round out Block B. So here's what I think is going to happen, is I'm going to edit the fuck out of this segment because I've said the same thing like 5 different times. Hold on a second. Ruby Grapefruit. I think Okada is going to win Block A. I think Kenta's making a great showing, and I think he's being set up to lose to Will Ospreay in a match because earlier this year, they set up Shingo Takagi to have like this big win streak, and Ospreay beat him. So Ospreay's not going to win his block, but he is going to beat Kenta, which is going to give Okada the lead. So Okada's going to win Block A. Moxley set up to win Block B. Okada faces Moxley in the finals of the G1. Okada's going to win, and he's going to name his opponent. Meanwhile, something's going to happen with Moxley and Kenta, because those two, that's the match you want to see. I think you want to see Moxley and Kenta for Moxley's title. He has the U.S. title, and then Okada's going to pick his challenger, and of course, he's going to pick young Will Ospreay. So Okada's going to win. Ospreay is going to get challenged by Okada to challenge him for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, and we're going to see Moxley and Kenta have a feud. And that's my call, my very convoluted, almost buzzed call for the G1 class. What the fuck's it called? For the G1 this year in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Roll Tide on that, I suppose. Well, okay. This is another black cherry. I think these are my options here. Is this what, like, healthy shit tastes like? It's very watery. I don't know. It's a seltzer, I guess. I don't like seltzer. I like Diet Dr. Pepper. I drink a lot of Diet Dr. Pepper. And I drink a lot of chocolate milk and Red Bull. I don't think that's healthy. So, this might actually be the fucking healthiest thing I've drank all week. Hold on a second. Quit smoking. Like, I went like 4 days without smoking, and I like celebrated on like Twitter and Facebook like a fucking moron. And then like I started sneaking cigarettes from nobody, just to myself, like an idiot. And here I am again smoking. So I'm a failure, but let's continue. AEW, their TV deal, and This fucking shit is terrible. And how it bodes for the future and the secret of their success. Guys, the announcement was made that they're, you know, of course they're going to be on TNT, but the announcement was made they'll be on Wednesday nights. It'll be a two-hour show. The first show will be in Washington, D.C., which is close to me. Unfortunately, I'm not going because it's not the week. It's not a week I have Matthew. I looked ahead on the calendar, so I'm not going, but I'm looking forward to watching on TV very much. And I think people kind of miss the boat on what it is I like about AEW and why I think it's going to be successful. Guys, the deal is promotion. These guys are so fucking good at promotion and marketing. For instance, when Cody Rhodes first left the WWE, he made a list. That list is everything. The way that he framed his departure from the WWE in the minds of people and got people to not think about, oh, here's this guy that got released from WWE. Here's a guy who is going to have these great matchups that he's always wanted to have. Here's a guy whose priority is to have great matches with these people that are very interesting, from Michael Elgin to Kurt Angle, and he wrote the Streamers thing, and you're looking forward to what the future holds for Cody Rhodes, who to a lot of people was a WWE mid-carder. But Cody knew better. He bet on himself, but he didn't bet on himself by like having work rate matches and just letting the fire catch. He fucking took the tiger by the tail. And he promoted that shit. At the same time, you had the Young Bucks, this cocky young tag team that look like a lot of other tag teams. They look like a lot of other wrestlers that age. They do the flippy stuff. They're young. They're tongue-in-cheek. But they turned down a WWE deal because they understand marketing. The Young Bucks know how to market themselves. What other people try to do, they did. You combine those three guys together. I saw them at StarCast. I saw how hard they worked. I saw the belief they had in themselves. And what I see from them is marketing and promotion. And this is what people who are traditionalists like Jim Cornette miss. This is what something like people like Vince Russo miss, who think that this is all about flippy shit and it's all about, you know, guys that aren't cool, they're dorks or whatever. They don't get it's marketing, it's promotion. When I started my business, I did a lot of research, a lot of reading, a lot of talking, a lot of learning about promotion research. And you'd be surprised to find out that the success of a product has very little to do with the quality of the product. They have done polls. They have done tests on that. They have done market research on that. What it has to do is with mostly is promotion, presentation, and marketing. If you're marketed right, if you're promoted right, then that's going to supersede quality. If McDonald's ain't got the best taste in fucking hamburger, but McDonald's is kicking ass because they know how to promote themselves. The Bucks and Cody and by extension Omega and Tony Khan and everybody involved in AEW, they know how to promote themselves. Now, the fact is they have a small audience now that's growing, but their audience is the young people. And the fact is they're going to be successful, guys. So hate on them all you like. Also, just one word about this whole like thing. If you're an AEW fan, fuck WWE. Or if you're a WWE fan, fuck AEW. Guys, we can like it all. We can enjoy it all. I'm hard on WWE because I've been watching for so long and I watch from a different perspective where I just want it to be successful. I want it to be good. And you see like Keller has that same approach where he gets frustrated because he just wants it to be good. I think sometimes a lot of us confuse that with it wanting to be the way it used to be. It has to be the way it was with Hogan, or it has to be the way it was in the Attitude Era. These guys couldn't fucking survive in the Attitude Era, people say. But if you do that, you're missing the point. You're not seeing the big picture. You're not realizing things change. I've said a million times that Beatles fans were listening to Beatles and Elvis fans listened to them and said the Beatles sucked. And then Beatles fans listened to Led Zeppelin and said Led Zeppelin sucks. This is WWE fans saying AEW sucks. It doesn't have to suck. Enjoy it all. Watch it if you want. Don't want. Watch if you want. Watch it if you want. Don't watch it if you don't want to. Don't just shit on a company because they ain't your company. I just want WWE to be as good as it can be. And I am wishing AEW all the success in the world. Will AEW be successful? Absolutely. And the reason is marketing and promotion. It fucking worked for Vince. It's going to fucking work for them. Another black cherry. Is that all they fucking have in this thing is black cherry? Now I'm just thirsty. I'm just drinking because I'm thirsty. So now we're going to get to the main event of Total Engagement this week, where I rewrite the Raw Reunion. Let me just say a couple things about this. Number one, I am writing the Raw Reunion with the fact that I watched it. With the fact in mind that I watched it. And I watched SmackDown the following day. So it's not like I'm getting it the day of and I'm rewriting it. I do have that benefit of hindsight of what worked and what didn't work. But I'd like to think that this is how I would have written it. And I'm going to go through segment by segment almost and talk about how I would have rewritten Raw. What is the purpose of the Raw Reunion? The purpose of the Raw Reunion is to take this little bump we're going to get, which I believe was a significant bump, and we're going to take those that bump, which is represented by people. So a bump is really people watching, more people watching that didn't watch the week before. And we're going to try to get these people to watch the following fucking week and be excited about the show. Now, I am conscious of kind of the Russo-Bischoff issue where I don't want to reset fucking everything, and maybe I did just a little bit, because that gets so old after a while, where you go, okay, let's take all the titles, and let's reset everything, and also just the Russo thing of so much going on. Not shitting on Vince, because I said this to his face several times, that sometimes there was just too much going on, and if there's something that my rewrite has, it's maybe a little too much going on. Keep in mind, I'm rewriting it. I'm not saying all these things should have happened, but this is probably how I would have written the show if I had the opportunity. Let me also preface this by saying I'm not going to call anybody up. I'm not going to add any more people to it. I'm not going to get too crazy. I'm going to go with the segments they had. Okay, what is this shit? Natural lime. It is literally the least natural fucking thing I've ever drank in my life. Natural lime. It should be called unnatural lime. So I'm not going to bring anybody up. I'm going to go with the segments they had and try to improve each segment if it needs it. If it's fine, we're just going to say it. Opening segment. You had Cena. You had the Usos. You had the Rikishi. I guess the news that came out is that Rikishi could not get cleared to do a stink face. Just let that process for a second. Rikishi could not get cleared to do a stink face. I don't know if that's true or not. I met Rikishi, drove him around. He was into the idea of the Revival laying him out at some point, which is kind of why I keep pushing it. And I would do everything pretty much the same, except I would do, I've said it so many times, I would love the Revival to just do kind of a haircut angle like they did with Andre the Giant and Heenan, where they shave the head of one of the Usos so now you can tell them apart or some shit like that, and keep the hair in a bag and bring it around. And D-Von would hold back Rikishi, and Cena would try to get involved, of course, but Drew McIntyre is what I would do. I'd have Drew McIntyre come out and attack Cena, and maybe not stretcher job him, but just have him attack him, do that awesome Claymore kick, and just plant a little seed for something later, or maybe something they don't have to do later. But McIntyre's the fucking guy. He's the guy to do it with. Meanwhile, McIntyre stays out there because he's got a match against Cedric Alexander. And he dominated him, and he didn't let the match start. He just kicked his ass. I'd do the same thing, except I'd make his initial thing more of a cheap shot. More of a cheap shot, so it serves the purpose of not bearing Alexander quite as much. But also, McIntyre is unhinged. He's fucking crazy. He doesn't follow the rules, but he's also this giant beast. He doesn't have to cheat, but he does. He takes shortcuts against guys like Cedric when he might not even have to. The Viking Raiders defeated Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins was the next segment. I'd make it a more contentious match. I would definitely, you know, Ryder and Hawkins won the tag team titles at WrestleMania. Did that fucking mean nothing? It should mean something. And the War Raiders are a great tag team that if they have a contentious match that they win, might even come off a little bit better. But maybe something fun, instead of Christian being at the commentary booth, you could have Hawkins and Ryder, because they both have short hair now, they could come out as peeps instead of edgeheads. Backstage, you had a thing with Maria Kanellis and Mike Kanellis, and then Eve Torres, Eric Bischoff was back there. He offered to sign Mike and Maria to SmackDown, which, what the fuck? But anyway, I don't know who wrote that, because who would want, you know, that right now? But I like this idea. You know, Ron Simmons comes out and he goes, damn, right? But I think just the way that Maria talks to Mike, I think when it's done, Ron Simmons walks in and he just goes, damn. Like sad, like almost sad for Mike Kanellis. I think that would be kind of funny. The next segment was AJ Styles, Anderson and Gallows. They had the new shirt, the OC, and they talked about how they're going to take out Rollins tonight. And we're going to talk about this a bit because the news that came out was that all the shit with Rollins was supposed to happen with Ricochet, but Ricochet was injured. I would do pretty much the same thing, except those fucking shirts are terrible. The OC is terrible. And I have a personal theory that I think Vince McMahon thinks that All Elite Wrestling is associated with the Bullet Club still, so he's going after the Bullet Club because that's who did the invasion and that's who did the Too Sweet, and that's why he's going after him. Just a theory of mine. I would do everything exactly the same except send those t-shirts back to the hellhole where they came from. Now, we had all this 24/7 stuff going backstage. I'd keep everything exactly the same. If I didn't, Medusa would kick my ass. Medusa is a friend who I am working with on some stuff right now because she's awesome. She's one of my favorite people in the world, and I'm not going to say anything negative about her because she would kick my ass. But I would just keep all the 24/7 stuff the same. I thought it was really good. Samoa Joe and the Samoan Joe, Roman Reigns, had a really good in-ring promo segment. I wouldn't change anything about that. I thought it was great. But what happened then is that Roman beat Joe. How does that help anything? So we're going to change. This is going to be the beginning of kind of what we see later on, is that, you know, instead of wrestling, Joe bitches out of the match. He doesn't do the match. Roman has an open challenge. Maybe someone like Eric Young comes out and Roman beats him easily, but maybe goes a little bit overboard. Maybe just a little too much on Eric Young or someone like Eric Young. After that, we had this just god-awful segment. Miz TV with Seth Rollins and then Paul Heyman, and it was really, really bad. Here's what I think. Here's what I would have rewritten to have happened. So I said this earlier, so it's not like I'm saying this because the Dolph thing happened. I tweeted it. I would have loved to see HBK come out and challenge Seth, challenge his heart, and say, and do the serious HBK promo. The serious HBK promo is badass, right? He comes out, he says, "Kid, you got it. You've got everything, but it's just too much of this," and he points to his mouth, "too much talking. I want to see more of this," points to his heart, and then more of this, and points to his fist, and less of this, and talks, points to his mouth, and just saying, less talking, more shit. Get your shit done, get focused, and that's the message HBK should say to him, and Seth Rollins is kind of heated about it. But then Paul Heyman interrupts and he starts doing his shit and he talks about Seth. He talks about Sean. Sean's about to super kick him. You know when like Sean squares up kind of sideways, you know he's about to super kick someone. He's about to set up, but Seth steps in to stop him because he's still angry. He's still upset. And it looks like he's going to face off with HBK, but then he kicks and curb stomps Heyman. And the fans totally go for that. But Seth Rollins is all jacked up. He's all excited. And he does the same thing to HBK. He attacks him. He's on the ground. He does the curb stomp. The Miz is in shock. Miz turns around. He does it to him. He attacks him and curb stomps him. He leaves in the ring. Seth Rollins leaves in the ring. Paul Heyman, The Miz, and HBK. He grabs the mic, but he doesn't drop it. He lays it down. And he walks out. But the purpose of that is, of course, to get Seth Rollins more over like a Steve Austin type. You don't want him to be a heel. You want him to be an unpredictable, dangerous, focused guy who wants to be the best. Less talking, more of an assassin. I just don't like the way Seth talks. But I think he was super cool when he was in the Shield and he would just fly out of the fucking ring. And you would be watching and he'd come out of the top corner of your ring. You'd be like, out of your TV, you'd be like, what the fuck? That's what I want to see. Seth Rollins is an assassin. He's not a talker. And they had this segment backstage where Charlie was interviewing all these legends and Sami Zayn came and talked a bunch of shit. First of all, I have no issues with Charlie at all. I think Charlie is maybe the most talented person in the history of wrestling. She is amazing. And then Sami Zayn came out, talked a bunch of shit. But instead of Rey coming up, have Cesaro come up and have them have a little banter like, hey, this show is about the Raw reunion, but let's show them what the future's like. Let's talk a little bit about NXT, talk about the match we had there, and let's talk about some unfinished business. Let's have Sami Zayn versus Cesaro tonight. Oh, God, it's terrible. And I'm getting, like, full. I'm not drunk, but I'm, like, full. It's just awful. This is not a good advertisement for White Claw. I think you kids out there will love it. It's perfect for you. For me, I would stick with chocolate milk and Diet Dr. Pepper. It's not just any match, though. Zayn versus Cesaro in a Legends Lumberjack match. They have the guys around the ring, and maybe there's, you know, Legends throwing them back in, all that fun stuff. But Cesaro and Zayn tear it down. The Legends come up to endorse them after it's over. Whoever wins, I'd say Sami Zayn wins because he's my favorite wrestler in the world, and maybe besides Will Ospreay. But Zayn maybe laughs in their face or walks away. Nothing too, like, he's not going to push Sergeant Slaughter or anything, but he's not accepting their endorsement. We saw Ric Flair arriving in a limo. How could anybody rewrite Ric Flair in a limo? The stuff with the next segment had the Street Profits with Dawkins saying he just smoked a bunch of weed. I didn't mind that at all. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, RVD probably was one of the people that showed up in the previous Legends Battle Royal. Then we have the Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles match. And, you know, instead of what we had, which was just, to me, terrible, it didn't work. It might have worked with Ricochet. It probably would have just been just as tone deaf with Ricochet. Let's have the same Legends come out the same way, maybe a little bit quicker, maybe a little bit more concisely, to endorse Rollins. But Rollins is out of his mind right now. He doesn't trust anyone. He beats the crap out of the club with a chair. He gets a chair and just starts beating the crap out of everyone. He grabs the mic as the Legends approach and says, "Hey, listen, I'm done talking. I'm learning from you. I'm done being nice. And you got two words for me. I got three words for you." And he holds the mic up. Burn it down. So the idea is to build Seth Rollins up using the Legends, not just going suck it and all that fucking self-congratulatory stuff. I think if you're going to have a Kevin Nash in there, a Scott Hall in there, a Road Dogg in there, a X-Pac in there, you and shit, a Triple H in there, and maybe not have Triple H out there, maybe not Triple H, Shawn Michaels already been out, maybe say DX isn't there because Shawn Michaels got taken out or something, but if you're going to have those guys out there, use their cachet, use their commodity to help a wrestler today better than they did by just saying, having Seth Rollins say, suck it. The Mick Foley segment. Everybody loved the Mick Foley segment. I didn't hate it. I thought it was a great use of Bray. It was a great use of Foley. You used the mandible claw. You didn't have to take a bump. But I would have made it a little more nuanced, more like what we saw on SmackDown. When Mick Foley's out there, the Firefly Funhouse theme starts, and Bray comes out. And he comes out maybe throwing stuff at the audience, but he's in full babyface mode. And Mick is kind of wary, but he's hopeful. And they have some fun banter, maybe talking about puppets. Mick Foley's like, "I like this puppet. I like that puppet." And Bray's like, "Oh, yeah, well, we're on the same page here." And then Bray goes, "You know, Mick, I have a favorite puppet." Then the lights go out. Then the music slows down. And when it comes back on, the Fiend has Mick in the mandible claw. And Mick is out. And Fiend pulls the mandible claw out, and he's wearing Socko. But he's not just Mr. Socko. It's Mr. Socko with a face like the Fiend. I mean, come on. That's better, right? The next segment was a moment of bliss with Becky Lynch. This, you know, Becky, I'm not a fan of the character right now. I think Becky, the real person, and Becky, the person who could draw a lot of money, is very far away from the Becky that's being presented to us. It was a cookie cutter kind of segment for Alexa Bliss, where you brought out, you know, Becky, and then you brought out Natalya, and they argue, and whatever the fuck, they have a fight. Who cares? So maybe we make it a little bit different, where Bliss gets inside Natalya's head the way she got inside Nikki's head, and Nikki's like in the background going, "Yeah, yeah, yeah," and Alexa's really playing mind games and getting inside Natalya's head too, not just Nikki's, and really boosting up this fight. And Becky looking over at Alexa like, "What the fuck?" and maybe setting up something later on. The next segment was Braun Strowman versus Randy Rowe, who was, you know, an enhancement talent that they just brought in to see how far Braun can throw him. So let's do that. Why not? Let's bring Braun out. People like Braun. Let's show how awesome Braun is. But instead of that, let's start it like this. Let's have a tag team match. And the tag team that's introduced are the Legends, the Conquistadors. And it could be anybody's the Conquistadors. And then the announcer goes, and their opponent, and Braun comes out. And Braun just destroys them. I think that would be a little bit more fun, a little bit more newsmaking, another fun segment to kind of perpetuate Braun a little bit. I'm not sure how much good it did to just have him face somebody we didn't know, but being at the Conquistadors, that's kind of cool. The final segment, a toast to Monday Night Raw. Let's do the same thing you did. You know, I thought it was great how you had all the legends lined up. I said before, Hogan coming out was fine. You know, some people have their thing with him, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say about all that. And Ric Flair comes out, you know, and they hug, and that was all cool. And then Austin comes out. He's the fucking guy, and he comes out to the middle of the ring. And let's keep everything exactly the same. Exactly the same. Except, once they're in the ring, Seth Rollins' music comes out, and he says that he wants everyone to know that, you know, he attacked HBK earlier, but he got in his face. But so he's not here to disrespect the legends. He appreciates the legends. He's not. This is probably the last time you're going to hear him talk like this for a long time, because he's focused on getting the title. He's here to say he meant no disrespect, but HBK got in their face, and anybody who gets in his face is going to get it from now on. And he has respect for them, but he wants to prove to them out there, because he respects those guys out there. He thinks he's not going to rest on his laurels. He's going to prove to everybody every single time he goes out there that he is the man now, that it's a new day. And the people out there, he's going to follow in their footsteps and points out what Flair had to do to get where he is, what Hogan had to do where he is, and certainly what the fuck Steve Austin had to do to get where he is. And he's just going to do the same, and he hopes they can respect that. They paved the way, and he's going to walk that road that they paved until it ends, and he's going to forge a new path. But it would never be there without them. And when he's done talking, Austin says, I'll toast to that. Seth comes out there. Austin gives him a beer. And they hit the toast. At the same time the toast hits, Roman Reigns' music hits. And everybody's a little curious. He has a mic. He says, hey, I want to join in the fun. Austin's like, oh, hell yeah. And Reigns comes to the ring. He grabs a beer. And he goes to cheer it. But he looks at Austin straight in the face. And he pours it down in front of his face, which is like a sin. Austin can sell that with his face so good. And then he turns and he spears Seth. And he grabs the mic out of Austin's hand and stares him down a little bit. Austin's not scared because he knew he was going to play that fucking role. But he stares him down just a little bit. And he says, screw you and screw this and screw the legends and screw the fans. I'm tired of playing nice. This ain't a look to the past. It's a look to the future. And starting right now. It's not the Attitude Era. It's not the Hulk Hogan era. It ain't the Ric Flair era. It is the Roman Reigns era. And Seth, as he looks down at him, who's on the ground, shocked, no matter who wins the title, you or Brock, I'm getting my title back. Believe that. And everyone's just shocked. And he walks out of the ring, and the camera kind of follows him. And there's a quick semi-accidental shot of him walking backstage to that gorilla position we see all the time now, and Reigns gets a big hug from Vince, and you hear Vince say, it's about damn time, pal, as the camera zooms in the ring on Hunter, and he's shocked. And that's the closing shot. That's my rewrite of Raw, and that's my episode of Total Engagement. I've got 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the beginning of 8 White Claws here. I am not drunk. I have done it for you, the listeners of Total Engagement. Please listen every single day that we have a show. We're probably going to be up to 5 shows a week. In the fall, we're going to be up to 7. I really appreciate you guys listening to all these shows. I really appreciate the listeners. Go to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We got some t-shirts coming out because, you know, we're a fucking podcast. That's what we do. And we're going to have a show in a couple days. Tell all your friends about it. Tell all your friends that Matt Coon tried to get drunk and failed and that they should probably tune in the next episode of Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon, on the MLW Radio Network, brought to you by our good friends over at WrestleZone.com, the world's most widely read internet wrestling news site on the planet.